another edition of Forever Bristol City podcast. And joining me today are my two regulars, Ian and Mark. The final score at the King Power Stadium, not unexpectedly, we didn't win. It finished Leicester 1, City 0. A gallant display is what I put out on Twitter, or X as it's now known, last night. A gallant display. As we normally do, I'll come to you first. Ian, 30 seconds, just encapsulate what you thought on the game.
Well, we went there to try and get a point and possibly snatch a win by hitting them on the break, but it never really came off. We had, I would say, almost zero quality in the final third, and we had to defend desperately at times. That being said, the only way they could get past us was a needlessly conceded penalty, and Nigel Pearson's return to the King Power was greeted with a very narrow defeat. But as you said, no real surprise.
No. Mark, your thoughts?
Yeah, no real surprise. Enzo Marasca, former Man City coach, obviously influenced, and it was like a carousel of passing. Where City were really, really outclassed technically, but had great defensive shape, defended brilliantly at times. But going forward, we just had an inferiority complex and wasted some great passing opportunities deep in their half, and gave away a stupid penalty when we could have edged towards a point against Leicester, who did labour at times, although they passed the ball well. They were labouring. Vardy already had a touch, but yeah, it was the score flattered us a little bit, but there you go.
Yeah, it's interesting you use that term inferiority complex, Mark, because certainly in the first half, you know, when at one stage, I think 30 minutes on the clock, the possession was 79-21, even though it ended mid-60s, mid-30s. But I thought we looked like it was our day out. You know, we were a lower league side playing on a first division, playing on a Premier League ground. Ian, the lineup, well, it came out of the blue. No Zach Viner, but as Nigel Pearson said himself, you know, you got an adequate replacement with Rob Dickey coming in. I did think pre-game, Dickey and Naismith in the middle, not the quickest on the turn, but, you know, the side picked itself, but losing Zach, who did a great interview, by the way, if people haven't seen it, on the Robins TV. Great interview. Losing Zach was a big blow, Mark, wasn't it? Ian, sorry, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a huge blow. And if it had been just a knock and he'd have been out for a week or so, then you can live with it. But when you hear the three dreaded letters, ACL, come into the equation, then it's a... you start to worry because we've got a small squad, and that's quite deliberately engineered by the owner and by the manager, and the budget for the squad isn't going to increase. But I mean, if you look at yesterday's game, the possession finished up 69-31. We had one shot on target, and that was right at the end from that free kick from TGH. They won more duels. They crossed almost four times as many times as we did. And they played 425 passes forward versus our 153.
Yeah.
So they also had 40 touches in the opposition box against our 17. So we can't complain about the result. I thought our performance was, I think you hit the nail on the head. It was brave. But it wasn't going to be effective, and it's very difficult with the size of the squad we got, the number of injuries we got, to compete with those sides. And I think that creates a little bit of a lack of belief when we get into the final third and we don't think we can get past the final player. Right. We don't think we can shoot. And I think that shows to me a lack of belief in the players that, yeah, we are good enough to play here.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. Mark, do you think there was any temptation to change the team at all from that which emphatically beat Plymouth in midweek, who themselves stuffed Norwich yesterday, which just shows the topsy-turvy nature of the division. But, you know, would you altered the front line in any shape or form or not?
No, not really. I don't mean there's a lot you could do. There is no inclination to change it. It was only that one enforced change, but I'll just back up what Ian said. I mean, let's go further. City looked scared in forward positions at times. I think Efraim Yeboah had a chance to hit the ball first time. So did Sam Bell. Just tendency to cut back instead of taking players on. And yeah, it was almost like, you're right, it was a cup match where, you know, it was a non-league team or a league two team playing at a Premier League ground. It was, I just don't understand that. I mean, what we did do very well, we defended excellently. We kept it very tight. Although they got a lot of crosses in, we defended every cross pretty adequately, and Max O'Leary had a very good game.
Yeah,
he didn't have many shots to save, to be quite honest. He made a couple of good saves, but I couldn't remember any world class saves. And like I said earlier, I mean, I think Vardy's only 10 in touch was the one he put in the back of the net.
Yeah, Ian, we were under the cosh fairly early on, as expected, and Fatawu. He volleyed wide early on after the ball had only been half cleared. They forced a flurry of early corners. I don't think they quite got into double figures, but Cam was given a bit of a torrid time early on. In fact, through the whole game on that side of the field, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was, but he was up against a top class player. And if you look at the disparity in the two wage bills between the clubs, that's why they can bring in players like that, but they've utilised the loan system, which, I know TGH is on loan officially, but it's pretty much a done deal. I think both fullbacks did okay against very tricky customers. And I think they were probably under a little bit more pressure than the centre backs. Who played well as well up until Naismith made the mistake for the penalty. But no, I think when you're up against those kind of players, they really are a test. And in this championship, you're going to be coming up against some good wide players. I mean, one of the wide players that Plymouth left out against us on Tuesday night scored a hat-trick against Norwich yesterday.
Was that Whittaker, wasn't it? Yes, is that right?
Yeah. So you are up against good players week in, week out, and sometimes the wide players are going to get past you in the same way that Sykes gets past players. I think he was the best of our front three yesterday, but having said that, that's quite a low bar.
Quite a low bar, yeah. I mean, I thought to myself, around about the half-hour mark, you know, we weathered the storm. We started to get into some good positions. Sykes lost possession on one occasion, but then, you know, Williams, who I thought was sloppy with his passing, sloppy ran, you know, the ball bouncing off him, going out of play, tried a crossfield pass, trying to find Sykes, which got intercepted, put us on the back foot straight away. We did come close just before the interval when Williams did put in a half-decent cross, and that was cleared with some difficulty by them. But, Mark, we didn't help us. We didn't capitalise on those positions. And whilst Nigel has said the front three, well, he was very pleased with the overall team performance, yeah? There was zero output, certainly in that opening 45, coming from Naki or Sam, for that matter, wasn't it?
Yeah, there was only really that flurry right at the end of the first half when Vestergaard, the ball, I think, ran up his left arm and over his stomach and down. I think we're really clutching at straws if we think that's going to be a penalty, you know, because there's nothing he could do about it. But when that ball was worked across, well, Sam Bell, first of all, should have had a go, and there were a couple of shots blocked, but there was no real pressure there, and it was completely wasted. But that's all we had really at the end of that half. Because when we got in those positions, especially with Williams, you know, we lost the ball in transition, and suddenly we're defending 50, 60 yards behind again. It was just so frustrating that when we did build up any pressure, we completely blew it. and it was the same in both halves. But yeah, all we had in the first half was that flurry at the end. You know, City fans screaming on the forums for a penalty that they were never going to get. VAR, no VAR.
Yeah. Ian, penalty in your book?
You're talking about the Vestergaard one?
The Vestergaard one.
I think it'd been extremely harsh. And as I said to you earlier, Dave, before we went live, I think the way I look at penalties is how would we feel if that was given against us? And I think I'd feel pretty rotten if the referee had given the penalty against us for that. And there was an incident late on, I think it was Naismith, where the ball might have caught his arm in the same way, and that didn't get given either. So the referee at least showing consistency there.
Yeah. Let's talk about the referee, James Bell. Not a name I'm familiar with, but that's probably my ignorance more than anything else. People say that when they play, lower teams play so-called big clubs, the referee operates in favour of the big club. Do you think you refereed the game decently yesterday, Ian?
I do. Yeah, I mean, we've had we've seen some absolute clown performances from referees, and that was a good one. I can't remember a major mistake he or the officials made, and I don't. You certainly can't blame the referee in any way, shape, or form for our defeat.
Yeah, Mark. Into the second half, it seemed to inspire. Leicester came out buzzing, didn't they? And I've got here Knight got himself. Well, he got booked, conceded a free kick outside the box. Then Max O'Leary saved from a Dewsbury Hall cross. Mavididi, another one of their, I think it's a lone player, cross again, and then Max saved again. I mean, bar his kicking on a couple of occasions, Max is looking pretty safe between the sticks, isn't he?
Yeah, his positioning for shots is really good. You know, near post for Mavididi. I think the Dewsbury Hall header was probably straight at him, but it was a comfortable save. Like I said, no world-class saves, but he's very good as a shot stopper. It's just some of his kicking sometimes is a little bit loose and it puts us on the back foot. I think that caused Viner's injury on Tuesday that we'll come to. And also, I think he shanked one yesterday when under a little bit of pressure, really. And if he's under pressure, he should just clear it long. Sometimes when we're passing the ball across the back, it gives me the shudders. I'm thinking just one loose pass and you can see that a goal, and even Manchester City do that. It's just crazy. Just get the ball forward if you're in doubt.
Yeah. Ian, substitutions, 60 minutes on the board, triple substitution, Williams, Bell and Sykes going off. No complaints about Williams going off. As I said, I thought he was poor, but the timing and the other substitutions, what's your assessment of that, Ian?
Well, strangely enough, about a minute earlier, and got my timeline in check, I tweeted the three players that we should bring on.
And don't tell me you got it right.
I got it right. Well, I wouldn't tell you if I got it wrong. But I wouldn't have taken Mark Sykes off because I thought he was the most effective of our front three. I can't understand why he left Naki on as long as he did, because I know he gets terrible service and we still played the ball forward far too much in the air yesterday. But not having scored a goal in about 27 in open play in 27, 28 games, surely we can't persist with Naki up front is a number nine. I don't know whether there's a free agent out there we can get our hands on. Although if the wage budget's maxed out, then we can't. I don't think Cornick's much of an alternative. So I'm then struggling to think, well, who'd you replace him with? Perhaps Andy Vollman in a slightly deeper role. I'm not sure, but surely we can't go on with having a non-scoring centre forward. It seems a bit of an odd thing. In terms of the substitutions, I think they bring... I'd like to see Yeboah get a go down the middle. And if he's not playing very well, whatever, he can be hooked. Nigel Pearson's hooked Alex Scott after 21 minutes of a game when he wasn't playing well. So give your Bowen a start. He's quick, he's strong, he's powerful. Let him have a run at players up front. I still think if we want to score more goals on a regular basis, we need to play with
a two. We need to play in a two, don't we?
Yeah, play a two. All our strikers would be better in a two, and that includes Wells, Yeboah, Byman, Cornick, Bell even. They're all better. Obviously, Tommy when he comes back. But I'd like to see Yeboah get a start against Stoke. It was per many one from Williams had to go off because he got picked up his statutory daft booking.
Yeah.
And then it was Sam wasn't having a great game. I wouldn't have minded seeing either Roberts or Anis Mometi.
Well, the other two, Cornick came on with 20 minutes.
To give us a little bit more balance and a little bit more width out there. But
yeah,
I don't think it would have made a great deal of difference to Ibrahim. Although I was impressed by Taylor Gardner-Hickman, and he's another player I think should start next week, but not right back in midfield.
No, he could. Well, we were just saying before we started recording, Taylor Hickman in midfield in place of Joe Williams, because he's certainly got the mobility, and you know, that's maybe being a bit harsh on Joe. What do you think about that, Mark? Taylor Hickman, a starter in the middle?
Well, if it gives us some mobility, I mean, Joe was just poor. Yesterday with some of his passing. I mean, people said he was good at defending, but that was I think more of a team effort. Really, it was a necessity that we were going to have to defend. But I think it was just leaving Jason Knight completely isolated. He really didn't get into the game, and that was because James and Williams were completely ineffective. But there's no way we can push Cal Naismith into midfield now to give some extra mobility, because he's needed at the back. We've only got one specialist centre-back that's fit now.
Naismith's going to have to play there. Somebody said Hayden Roberts is... There was a thread on Twitter, and Dave responded to it. Dave Febs. Somebody said, you know, like, are there any free agents out there? And I think it was, Ayala? There's a couple of names that are on that list. And as Dave pointed out to whoever put that on OTIM, Hayden Roberts is a centre-half. Yeah? And you can always
Play Cam Pring now.
You can always move Cam. I mean, there's an argument. Yeah. Ian, correct me if I'm wrong here, but if I was just thinking, you know, they were dominating the midfield. And yesterday, you could have played a proper 4-5-1. And now tell me I'm sensible, or tell me if I'm right out of order. Sam Bell playing as the one with his pace, allowing somebody like Taylor Gardner-Hickman to come in as the extra man in midfield. I'm just talking about yesterday now. We would have swamped the midfield, whereas yesterday we had three up front that were isolated most of the time, weren't they? Is that such a daft idea to pace Sam down the middle? Because he can just run left or right, can't he?
We played Sam down the middle once, and he was dreadful because we pumped high balls to him. Now, it doesn't matter if you play Lionel Messi down the middle. If you're going to pump the ball over his head, and they had two centre-backs who were a thick end of 7 feet tall. Now, if you're going to pump high balls to Sam Bell, Naki, whoever, then it's a waste of time. In terms of the midfield, you mentioned Jason Knight. I thought some of his passing selection and his shooting, certainly, he had a good chance on the edge of the box.
He did.
At the end of the game, smashed it miles over the bar, leaning back, awful. And some of his pass selection, and he was a lucky boy to stay on the field, because he got booked after two tackles that you could have booked.
But he could have got booked for the first one, Ian, couldn't he? And then if he'd have done the second, he'd have been off.
And then he caught somebody later on. And I'm thinking get him out of there. Because it's all right having a player that's box to box and makes the runs and keeps running, and that's all lovely. But sometimes he gets frenetic and he loses it a bit. And that's when his pass selection, his shot selection, and his tackling goes right out the window.
He
just needs, he's got tons of energy. He just needs a few kilograms of lacking what's the right word I'm looking for? Calmness.
Yeah.
Calm down. Just a
measured approach. He needs to take a step back.
Yeah. Just think, well, hang on a minute. If I go in for that tackle, I'm going to, you know, I could go. And I think he, the point of the game, he lost it a little bit. You know, Chris, when Chris is on here, he goes on about Andy Vyman in the out of control speedboat mode. And that night is, he could go into that mode as well. Because, and another player you'll get is, Andy Vyman can get like that, but you can sense Naki getting more and more frustrated by his lack of goals.
Lack of service, lack of everything.
Lack of service every week. You can just see it in everything that he does. He picked up a daft booking against Plymouth for kicking the ball away.
Yeah.
You know, so...
Well, that was yeah, he kicked it away. I think, if I recall that correctly, it was just... kicking it away, yes, maybe in frustration, but it wasn't massively frustrated. I just thought that was a really pernickety booking because you can't... I remember at the time thinking, you just don't do that now. Maybe it was frustration. I don't know. Okay, Mark, let's talk about what proved to be the decisive goal. Last weekend against West Brom, Cal Naismith timed it to perfection. He spoke at length about, you know, not going to ground too early. And Didi, I thought maybe the ball was too far in front of him, but 100% penalty every day of the week, that is, Mark, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, and Didi was class all match. You know, the amount of space he made for midfield runners was excellent. And you know, like it should be really with the money that they pay for him. He gets the ball in the penalty area. He's got space in front of him. He feints the shoot on his left, then he switches it back. Now, I've had a look from it behind the goal. I think Naismith tries to challenge him, but he's just completely conned him and dangles out a leg, and he's going to go over that. But it's a definite penalty. Mm. Naismith's been conned, and it's a shame that Cal had to give that penalty away because he was outstanding. He was our best. He was our best defender yesterday. He keeps his head up. He didn't rush any other challenges, and he had to go and do that, which was so clumsy. But it was indeed. He completely did him. Went one way, then came in the other. I think Cal should have just stood up and tried to guide him away from the goal, force him into having a shot, and see what happens.
Yeah.
You're going to give the referee a decision, even if it's a borderline. It wasn't. It was nailed on. And the penalty by Vardy, I mean, he's been apparently been barracked all game because I think some of our fans were saying nasty things about
about just Rebecca. Chanting, "Your missus is a grass" or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. And he, I mean, the penalty, I thought when I saw it, the ball was rising over the bar, but it was just on the rise into the top of the net. It was a fantastic penalty. And that was the only good touch he had in the whole game. He did nothing really because
Nigel brought him into the club 11 years ago. So he's
from Fleetwood, yeah.
Not the player he was. Ian, you said to me yesterday, you saying, you know, Cal was pretty much man of the match until he did that. And you said his body position was all wrong for it, wasn't it? And do you think the guy had lost control of the ball and he made the referee's decision easy?
Yeah, I mean, indeed, he may have hit the ball a little bit further in front of him. And what I noticed is when he went down, there was a covering defender next to him. I think it was either TGH or possibly Cam Pring running back towards the goal. And if you look at the incident, the minute Ndidi goes down and that defender is running back, is alongside him. So that was a covering defender there. There was no need for Cal to make that challenge. His body position was all wrong. He was set up to block a shot from the guy's left foot. The guy came back on his right foot, and then Cal was off balance, so he fell over and stuck his left leg out. He had absolutely zero chance, well, I'll say 5% chance possibly, of getting a touch on that ball, which would have saved him, but it didn't. And, you know, the leg's out, the lad's caught, he's gone over. How would we feel if that happened to one of our strikers and a penalty wasn't given. I think we
if that happened to one of our strikers and a penalty wasn't given, that's pretty much par for the course, isn't it?
Well, we'd feel pretty sick.
We'd be sicker than we felt on numerous occasions.
Well, it would have been nice. It would have been nice to have been in that position, David. But there was zero chance of that, wasn't there, yesterday?
Well, we'd only. I mean, you think 17 touches in the opposition box in 90 minutes? That tells you all you need to know, really. And we had opportunities to do things at the end. And people criticise Max. I wouldn't swap Max for the keeper they had yesterday. And that's
Hermansson.
I think he had
his Teflon gloves on, didn't he? Right at the end. I think Pring does. Pring came inside, switched it to his right, far post, and he went to grab the ball and just dropped it in front of Vyman, and Vyman's got a very tough angle on his left foot, hits it first time, and James Justin is at the near post and blocks it with his heels.
He hit it with his right foot, Mark, and
Vyman hit one over as well just before that when the ball dropped to him in an awkward position. I think it might have been Williams. Was Williams?
No, it was Knight. Knight played the ball across to him really fast. I think Knight.
He was berating. I mean, look, I have to say, taking apart season 21, 22, that's right, when Vyman got those 22 goals. But, he took over the captain's armband when he came on, for goodness sake, and he was doing his usual pointing that Chris Honor is usually on about when he's on here. If Andy's fit now and you want to give Naki Wells a rest, start Vyman up front in the middle against Stoke next week. He's your most experienced forward. Yeah, let's see what you can do, Andy, because personally, that season apart, you get what you get with Andy Vyman, which is, the uncontrolled speedboat. Can't fault him for effort, but he'd get a job outside of football if players needed to work at the end of their careers as a traffic warden on point duty.
The difference between
we don't have traffic wardens on point duty anymore.
No, the difference between Vyman 2 years ago and Vyman now is he's had some injuries. He hadn't been played down the middle. And when he got those goals, he was playing alongside Semenyo, who could break lines and play with his back to goal. And also Martin, who had a lot to contribute, although he wasn't a target man. That is a free. They just worked excellently. We haven't got that because every time we get a partnership, last season, I think Wells and Conway were starting to form a great partnership as a two. And then Conway tears his hamstring in January and that's out the window. And the same thing happens again and again and again with City. As something starts to settle, an injury blows it.
The game finished, as we know, 1-0. We're still sat there in a decent
position. We're not going to talk about the great free kick then on 94 minutes.
Do you know what? I must have missed that one then. I did. I'd gone off and made a cup of tea. I was like, sod this, we lost this now. In fact, no, I can't remember what I did. Tell me about the free kick. And Mark, you mentioned it and then you add to
it. Well, your Boas fouled just outside the 18-yard box on the left-hand corner. And Mometi and Taylor Garner-Hickman are over the ball. And Garner-Hickman hits it well. It's got some power, beats the wall, but it's straight down the keeper's throat, right in the middle of the goal, and that's it, game over. You wonder if Mometi's left-footed, but he's not. He's right-footed. He just plays on the left. Might have been better because he probably would have put it in the air. But again, clutching its straws. Last minute, I mean, 99 times out of 100, that's never going to go in, is it, with City?
We've had our fair share of injury time winners.
That far out though, David.
Yeah. What did you think about that at the end, Ian?
I don't think it was a free kick. I think Yeboah did well to get that. I don't think the referee would have given a penalty for it if it was in the penalty area, let's put it that way. It was our only shot on target in 90 minutes. Well, 94, as Mark said. So I think we played two at the end of the first half as well, so that'd make it 96, wouldn't it? But, I can't think of any time. Well, I can think of times when we should have had efforts on target and tested the keeper. But as I said, the pass selection from Knight, I mean, the ball he put to Vyman was a classic example.
That's right,
So he had to smash it. Well, he might have been able to take a touch, actually. So he had to hit it on the volley. But that summed up our game in the final third of it yesterday.
Well, that sums up Andy Vyman. That does sum up Andy Vyman. Because
it doesn't, Dave. Hang on, wait a minute. Wait. You're having a go at the kid. He's one of the most likely people at our club to score a goal in a game.
I agree.
He got 20-odd and got a dozen assists. As Mark quite correctly said, he was playing in a more of a 10 role, but behind two really good strikers at the time, and one who's moved on for £10.5 million.
So one's playing for the gas,
and one's going to go to the gas. But you do all right for them, Chris Martin. It's all right saying, well, you know, why would you have Vyman in a team? But you need players in a team that can score goals, and he is a goal scorer. The other seasons he's had, he's always got 10 or 12, something like that. Who else is going to... I mean, the only other guy I look at and think, yeah, I could see him getting 10 or 12 goals is Tommy Conway, and he's out injured.
So he's good. He times his runs well, and he gets in good positions.
Yeah.
Like that one at the end. That was a quarter chance really on the far post, but he was there. The ball was smashed into him by Jason Knight. He's advancing onto the ball. He just needs to pass, waiting a lot better, and he's coming in. He might have got the ball shot on target.
Yeah,
but that's it. There was no control from Knight, and why not give him a try there? We're struggling. We're really struggling for goals apart from Plymouth. That really flattered us. We'd scored 5 goals, hadn't we, in 6 games up to the Plymouth game. So that bumped up our goals for. Yes. But yeah, play Vyman is in a natural position down the middle. Wales is struggling. Why not? He's fit. And
I'd agree. Three of us in agreement in that. Then that Andy Vyman starts up front in place of Naki Wells next week. Yeah, no questions. Yeah. And so, look, I mean, we've done the game. Let's talk about the team for next week. Or before I do that, Ian, just back on you quickly. Same for you, Mark. Tanner and Dickie. You know, I've seen a few people praising George having a solid game. He didn't get exposed. Ian, your comments on those two.
Yeah, they're both good defenders. George lacks... I've said before with our fullbacks, it's a feature this year that neither of them have got forward very much. And the reason for that is that we don't know... When we dominate possession, or even when we do dominate possession, they don't get the service. It's the same argument with the forwards. You know, they need players who can play them the ball at the right time, so they're on ball in front of goal it's that lack of tempo in our play that does it. I mean, Cam was going to go on a brilliant run yesterday, and their lad fouled him and got booked. I think both the fullbacks. I mean, I don't think George Tanner is going to let you down very often as a defender, and I think Rob Dickie the same. And Rob Dickie can play the ball out. That. The issue when you talk about, Cam Pring can cover it centre-back and Roberts can play centre-back. Yeah, they can. Left centre-back. So what happens if Dickie gets injured?
Well, if Dickie gets injured, we got a problem.
Well, you
we have.
We got a problem anyway.
Well, if Dickie gets injured, you go back to the antic, as you would call it, Ian, of playing Andy King in the back four. That went well.
Well, no, I wouldn't do that. I'd play... Knight LaBelle. He's a right.
But Knight LaBelle and Arroyo, they seem to have sort of.
Arroyo is left sided.
Is he? All right. Knight LaBelle right?
Knight LaBelle's right sided.
Okay.
Yeah.
He wasn't even on the bench yesterday, which is.
Well, no, but he's got this other lad, Nelson, who's also right sided.
What, right sided defender?
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Very quick. But more, I would think, the way they're talking about him, more of a fullback than a right centre-back. But, you know, we keep talking about the academy and the players that are coming through. Well, if you lose Dickie for whatever reason, then Knight LaBelle is your only right-sided, I think, replacement, unless somebody
else... you're right.
He's
the only one we got left. Absolutely no doubt about that.
Or you could bring in... you could bring George Tanner in one and play... Or play TGH at right-back. So... If you're saying, have we got options? Yeah, but you're back.
They're not ideal, but they're not ideal, but we got options. That's the key.
Well, you're talking about players who can play there as opposed to players who do play there.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's very true. So, Mark, looking forward to Stoke City next week. They're playing their match this week. What is it? This afternoon, isn't it? Yeah, they're playing they're home to Hull. Yeah, managed by Alex Neil. Splashing the cash rather a lot, haven't they been, Mark? Where's that money? Have they been selling players, or are they? What's happened there?
I don't actually know. I haven't really been following their fortunes, yeah. But I know, I mean, they started off with a big win against Rotherham, but I've stuttered along since then, and they're on 7 points at the moment, aren't they, after seven games. So sort of, you know, they're around the bottom of the table, what would shoot up the league if they beat Hull today.
Yeah, and with Alex Neil, we know the sort of tactics. It's going to be like Preston in red and white stripes, would you suggest?
Yeah, I mean they've got Johnson, haven't they? It was formerly at Preston playing for them.
Is that the one with a ponytail? Yeah.
Yeah, they got Travers. They got Travers, the former Bournemouth goalkeeper. But there's been a big changeover, isn't there? In personnel, I think, in the last couple of years at Stoke, with the money problems that they've had, you know, shipping out players like Nick Powell. Players on big wages like we were, really. So, you know, they brought in Alex Neil, who's a competent manager at less level, likes to play the game a certain way that won't please a lot of Championship fans. So it's going to be tough next week. I suggest that they'll probably play some spoiling tactics similar to Birmingham and Preston. We're going to have to break them down. It will be a difficult game.
Ian, changes for next week. We've mooted the idea of, we've mooted two, really, haven't we? Which is Taylor Gardner-Hickman in for Williams, maybe playing Andy Vyman up front down the middle. And then if he doesn't work out, you know, you've got Cornick that can come on in that position. But would you make any changes yourself? And what about starting Yeboah? Yeah, and where do you start him? Yeah, because Sykes of the front three seems to be the most consistent at the moment.
But I'd start Yeboah up front. It's centre forward.
Right.
That give him a go there. And like I say, you can't score any less than none. So give him a go there. I'd put Naki on the bench with Harry Cornick. Start Yeboah up there. Possibly bring Knight LaBelle onto the bench, and unless Nelson can play centre back, just in case anything happens to Rob Dickey, I'd leave the rest of it pretty much the same. It's not a question of ripping up and start again, unless you want to say, well, what we'll do, we'll leave Joe Williams out, and we'll play an extra forward, or you could leave Knight out and play an extra forward.
I don't think you're going to leave out your player that cost you the most money, though, Ian. This is the thing.
Well, it's not a question of money. It's a question of what works best. If you're up against a team, like you said, if you want to play 4-5-1, if you want to go away from home and play 4-5-1, I could see a scenario where you could play Taylor Gardner-Hickman in front of George Tanner and Roberts in front of Cam Pring.
Yeah,
if you want to go solid defensive, pack the midfield, they shall not pass, and you play a flat five in midfield, and you say to Knight, okay, if you can break forward and keep up with the striker, the problem is we don't have a one at the club. Tommy's the nearest thing we've got to what you'd call a traditional nine, but once again, Tommy's not at his best. Back to goal with a big thumping great centre half up against him. Unless we get the ball into his feet. So we have got options, but it's a question of what's going to work best. And if with Sykes sitting in, it may be time to say, well, we don't need two holding midfield players at home. Let's put an extra striker in, and then let's score a couple of goals. And then if we want to go more defensive, great, go more defensive, and they shall not pass.
What do you think, Mark?
I've definitely play Andy Vyman next week, and if you get going for pace, I mean, you could play Yeboah alongside him with Sykes. Well, over the Yeboah would be, you know, it's really a right sided player. Put Taylor Garner Hickman in midfield instead of Joe Williams, but keep the same back four. I think really to break him down, having some pace, I think is something that you definitely need up front in this division. You need to get behind teams, and a little bit of physicality. And I think that's the only thing Sam Bell doesn't offer. You can see him get knocked off the ball very easily when he's got the ball in front of him. He can beat players.
Let me pose this question, Mark. Right, you say a bit of physicality, yeah?
Because
You know, Tam does okay. I'm neither a fan nor a, you know, scapegoating him at all. But what about playing Pring in that wide left in front of Roberts for home? Because Pring's got the physicality, and get him to get down that line, because he could put in a few decent crosses. I mean, I didn't notice anything that Sam Bell did yesterday at all. So
I think Sam looked a bit frightened in all the Leicester defenders, who were pretty competent, but it was a chance for him to shine. You know, there was nothing ventured, nothing gained. He could have tried a few different things and pushed his defender out wide, rather than just, you can tell, you know, when a player's losing the battle with his defenders, when they just put their foot on the ball and they're looking back to play an easy pass back, rather than trying to mix it. So there's something to playing Cam there, but I think Cam and George defensively, they haven't been bad. I think I don't think there's any reason to change him. Hayden Roberts, there's also a possibility of playing Hayden Roberts for the forward, like he did when he came on in a couple of games ago.
Dare I say it, Ian, I'll come to you on this, and it's Mometi, you know, he's left or centre, isn't he? You know, I mean, let's give him a run. He seems to be a little bit out of favour, comes on as a sub, 88 minutes yesterday, hardly time to make an impact. But, you know, as I say, this isn't criticism of Sam Bell, but you know, if you want to change things around a bit, you've got a player. We need to leave the back four intact and put Bell on.
Yeah, we need to score more goals. We need to score more goals at home. That's the thing in a nutshell. And the answer is, and you have to sit down with the coaches and Nigel Pearson and say, right, how do we do it? And it might be, you say, well, we might need to take more risks defensively. In other words, play one holding midfield player instead of two. And then you become a side that might win a game 4-3 as opposed to might win it 1-0. So it's about risk. It's risk and reward. Some teams play with two tens, you know, so you could play Vyman and Knight as two tens and then have one up front.
Yeah, so, that would work. Yeah, busy bees, as Lee Johnson used to say.
Yeah, so you could play either Naki or Harry Cornick as your nine, and then play two tens, and you're still playing 4-3-3. But then you think, well, Mark Sykes has probably been our overall one of our most effective forwards. Where do you play him then?
Yeah.
So it's a case of how do we get the best. I think I'd like to see Sykes start in the game. I'd like to see Yeboah, who is a centre forward, not a right winger, given a proper go. And as I say, we've got five subs these days. So if the young man's having a torrid time of it, you can hook him after 30 minutes.
That's exactly right, Ian. Let's start him in a game rather than this impact. You know, let him get into the game. And as you said, last year, Nigel took off Alex Scott after 24 minutes, you know. So if he can do that to Scott.
It was either last year or the year before, and Scotty was playing right.
Can I just say
something? I've just discovered why I've been chatting a newsflash.
What's that?
I didn't know what Stoke's transfer dealings were over the summer. I've just looked at Soccer Base. They signed 18 players, 14 full transfers and 4 on loan. The ones I recognise, Ender Stevens, a free from Sheffield United, Lyndon Gooch from Sunderland, obviously our friends, Mr. Daniel Johnson, some from clubs. I mean, they got Ben Pearson, they added on loan last year from Bournemouth. He's coming for lots of undisclosed fees. Michael Rose from Coventry on a fee. And of course, the four loans are they got Mark Travers from Bournemouth on loan, an under 21 from Wolves, Luke McInerney from Burnley, and Hak Sabanovic from Celtic. But yeah, I don't know where the money's coming from, but that's not a small amount of business, is it?
They're very wealthy, the coach family.
Well, you've got to look at outgoings as well. It depends on.
Yeah.
And if they've lost players like we've lost Callas, who cost us 8 million quid and we know was on big wages. So it swings in roundabouts, isn't it? But one thing for sure, our next set of accounts that come out will still show a reasonably high wage bill because it included...
Yeah, you're talking about the accounts to June 23, aren't you? Yeah, because we've rolled the year end over 1 month.
Yeah, so they'll include... things like, if the accounts go to June, when did we sell Scotty?
August.
Yeah, so Scotty won't be in it, but Antoine will. Yeah. So when you look at the wage bill will be an inflated one as opposed to what you'll see in 23, 24, when we finally, that'll be when we sold Alex Scott and the clear out takes full effect.
You won't physically see those until probably, because bearing in mind on the old financial year, end of May, we used to see stuff at the end of November, then it slipped into December. You won't see that until January 2025, right? Which is a hell of a lot can happen there. Let's move on to a couple of other things. Ian, I'll stick with you, Ian. Obviously, I'll come to you on it as well, Mark. The restructure, you know, there was some missive came from the... club's communication department that the chief executive isn't going to be replaced and the current finance director is going to take on more of a COO role. What do we read into that? You know, that's freed up some cash, you know, maybe, has it?
Well, I don't know. You don't know what they've had to pay the other guy who's going to become the chief operating officer. Now, the reason that normally happens, and I'm not claiming any inside knowledge, you'll notice the other guy is a chief operating officer, COO, as opposed to CEO, which would suggest to me that Phil Alexander has been, or the position of CEO has been made redundant.
Yeah.
And that's how they've been able to move Phil Alexander out by saying, well, you're redundant, and here's 6 months, a year, whatever his contract said, compensation, please sign this compromise agreement. You're going and you get this big handful of money. We're not allowed to slag you off. You're not allowed to slag us off. And that's the way it goes. So the new guy can't be a CEO because the position's been made redundant. I'm saying this is what I've seen happen in companies. Right. I'm not saying this is what's happened at City, but the other guy is a COO and it makes no difference at all. But the background of the board and the chief operating officer is FD.
They're all finance guys.
They're normally what our American friends unkindly call bean counters. Mm. And what it normally means is there will be an ongoing focus on cost control or cost reduction. So I would think that the club, we know that Steve's open to offers for it. He said he's not desperate. He doesn't have to sell it, but he's open to offers. And at the moment, I can't see any offers coming in because it is rumoured that the ex-CEO had contacts in the United States and may have been able to sell Bristol Sport as a franchise. But I don't think anything's been forthcoming on that. And when you look at where the club is in terms of its accounts, in terms of the debt to Steve, I can understand why. I can't understand why anybody would want to buy it. If they did want to buy it, they'd want to buy the infrastructure,
because they got to buy Ian. We
then they got an asset.
It's got a bit. It's lock, stock, and barrel. It's not just Bristol City. It's lock, stock, and barrel. You're not going to get somebody put in and give and get a third of the shares or even 40% of the shares, because that is a minority interest, and Lansdowne will call all the shots. I mean, what do you think? What do you think, Mark? I mean, do you think it's sort of, do you think it's a fudge saying we're not replacing chief executive because it makes the embarrassment of having a person recommended by somebody of high esteem, i.e. Richard Scudamore, it alleviates the embarrassment of, you know, just holding your hands up saying didn't work out for whatever reason?
Yeah, it seems a bit political. If they're going back to somebody who's already been inside the club, it shows that, you know, what they've done before, they want somebody who's known to them, they want to play it safe. But it says a lot about the future transfer strategy, that any transfer spending will be dictated by trade and not any new input influx from Steve Lansdowne. We're going to have to sell to buy, basically. Yeah.
I think it's a very
safe thing. I mean, going back to what Ian said, Alexander would have, I mean, like you do in business, he would have had to sign an NDA somewhere along the line. We won't say anything about Bristol City for fear of being sued. So, but it's just a very political move, and I think it just tells fans really that moving forward, the club's tightening its belt in terms of what Steve Lansdowne prepared to spend. They're cutting back, not having a CEO. It is a money saving exercise in a way, but like Ian said, we won't see that maybe for 12 months, because the COO will get an uplift. And of course, Phil Alexander will have the remainder of his contract paid up. There will be a payoff. Yeah, that's the compromise for him leaving the club. In terms of an amicable agreement, which you know, it's a bit of BS, really, isn't it?
It is.
But yeah, it tells you. It tells the fans a lot about the way that the club's moving forward. Just don't expect much in January. Don't have any there's not gonna be much excitement. Don't expect players to come through the door. It's gonna be very difficult 12 months or so. It's gonna be dictated by results on the pitch. City's biggest issue isn't finance, it's not form, it's injuries that we've got problems with.
You're right, Mark.
Well, our any continuity and any opportunity to move forward is just completely ruined by the continuous number of long-term injuries we've got.
And
that's our biggest enemy.
Because as some come back, another
it's always key players.
Stick with you on this point, Mark, and I'm going to ask Ian the same thing. I mean, we saw it, you know, the logo was on the back of the South Stand, and we saw it's Take That, they're coming to Ashton Gate in concert next summer.
I was offered a ticket and I said no.
Funny enough, when I interviewed people on, I think it was Points West or the other one, you know, like Take That, didn't seem to be too many people excited about going, because it's only 4 years ago that they were here, if I recall correctly. But back in the day, and I think, I'm sure I read somewhere, that, well, not back in the day, this week, that's one of four concerts that are going to take place at Ashton Gate. But back in the day, that money from those concerts, and I don't know how much we make, that would have gone into the club's coffers. So, you know, that
money it is going into the club coffers, but I think we're more concerned.
It's going into Bristol Sport. It won't go, City won't benefit. If we made £2 million, if Bristol Sport made, or the ground made £2 million on concerts next year, if they have four of them, all right, that seems a reasonable number. That's not for us. That's Bristol Sport. And whichever way you look at it, we are tenants in a ground now that is not owned by the club.
Yeah, and that complicates the desire of any new investor or buyer to buy the club, because it's like a cat's cradle of companies, isn't it, at the end of the day? What are they going to get for their money? And I mean, if it was a Saudi bidder, not saying it's going to be, or an American bidder, they want everything, wouldn't they? They wouldn't want a chunk of it. It's a waste of time.
So
same to you. You know what? You know, this is, you know, we're tenants in a ground that we once owned, and we're not going to get the benefit of something that we should get. You know, and you could say that if it's 2 million, then based on attendances, whatever, we should get three quarters of it, and we should get two thirds of it, and then the rugby and the women's football share. It don't work like that. It's not great, is it, Ian?
Well, the issue is, if you were Steve Lansdowne, you'd want some security over all the money that you pumped into the club. And the only way that you get that is what you've got. Bristol Sport, don't forget, Bristol Sport also pay all the bills for Ashton Gate. They pay all the money for all the staff, for all the concerts. So they pay all the bills. We pay a set fee for playing a game. And we'll say that fee's, I don't know, 20 grand a game. Call it that. So that's your fee. So Bristol City Football Club know their costs. Now, Bristol City will get the money generated by football. And the rugby club probably get the money generated by rugby. But they also lose money. And that money has to be subsidised, because you can't go on as a club, as anything, as any business, losing money without someone either lending you the money. So that's either your bank as an overdraft, or we'll call an owner a benefactor. So at the moment, what you've got to remember, the last few years, every year, Steve Lansdowne's pumped in something like 15, 16 million quid.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Now, you can do it both ways. You can't say, well, yeah, we want to keep all the money for the ground, and we want to keep all this, but hey, Steve, you keep pumping the money in. Because at the moment, the last set of accounts, we don't know what's in this one exactly, but the last set of accounts, £100 million worth of debt to more or less all of it, about 95%. There was an overdraft as well to Steve Lansdowne. And then you've got the money that Steve's obviously paid. He borrowed it initially for the stadium. There was a mortgage. He paid that off. So the club has got that debt, and it's both teams, the rugby team as well, have been losing money. Now, it'd be interesting to see the next set of accounts that come out, how much we've lost, or indeed by selling Antoine, whether we broke even. But I'm guessing it'll be a small loss. When I say small, small in comparison to the last 2 years when we lost almost 70 million quid over the 2 years. So, you know, you can't have it both ways. Yeah, and I think anyone buying it would want all the infrastructure. So it would probably be that they bought, I'll call it the franchise of Bristol Sport, but they buy Bristol Sport and not one of the teams.
Yeah, no, I think we said that, right. Almost time to wrap up. Mark, Pearson, adored by the Leicester fans. Yeah, it was telling in the interview that he did after the game yesterday. You know, he said, Bristol City are a big part of my life now. Yeah. It would send out the right signal. I'm not saying now, but, you know, at the turn of the year, yeah, when maybe some of our players are back, I gather from a good source, Eamon is going to be back on the grass in a couple of weeks' time. So that's good news. A player that, you know, has been out long-term is on the road to recovery again. We got to give Pearson a contract. Not Steve Lansdowne would deflect a lot of the flack away from himself if, I say, Christmas time, if we're in the top half, if we are where we are now, give him a new 2-year contract. I don't think Nigel would be too fussed. It's only 2 years. Somebody said I was a bit mean saying, oh, let's give him a rolling 12-month contract. But we got Pearson deserves recognition. And I think he is committed. He's saying there's a job to do here. Pearson for the long term, Mark. What do you think?
Well, I think they've got to make a decision by Christmas. Because there's you know, a lot of uncertainty. It would be crazy otherwise, you know, if he didn't have an A in place, you know, limping on to the end of the season, knowing that his contract's running out. I mean, the results have been improved slightly. He hasn't got a fantastic win rate, but I think some of his transfers maybe at the beginning were questionable with the Danny Simpsons. I think we got a little bit of an identity now. But like I said, where Pearson's concerned, it's like pushing water up a hill, because it's no sooner we've gone two steps forward, we go another step back with injuries, and that's the biggest enemy we got. That's stopping progress. That's not helping him. But we need some decision on his future soon, because somebody else, if somebody else comes in, they're going to inherit exactly the same problems, the injury issues, financial issues, player contracts coming to an end. All of these things are going to be inherited by a successor, whoever that may be, if it happens. So there's, you know, it's a little bit of a worry. I think the other thing, Matty James's contract is coming up for. That's another thing that's been talked about this week. That's another elephant in the room. It's always issues with contracts, but with the manager, they've got to sort that out soon. Fans will be worried. I mean, he's not the messiah in terms of being a manager, but he's the best that we got. We're making some progress slowly. You've got to do something soon, otherwise, it'll be a mess.
Are you in that school of thought, Ian? I'm not saying doing it now, because you know it's that 66 games between the two international breaks. I said three wins, one draw, two defeats being what happened yesterday, and probably at Leeds. So we're looking now at winning the next two games. That would put us on, what, 18 points after 11, I think, or after the Leeds game, assuming we lost that. But Pearson done enough in your book? You know, Mark and I seem to think he has done.
No. I see his results at Christmas.
And right, if we're where we are now, if we're in that...
Well, if you're anti, Dave, you know, see his results at Christmas. The last three seasons, we've won 15 games a season. I don't really... So all what he's achieved is that we've lost less and drawn more. That's what he's achieved. Now, Mark says win rate's not great. His win rate's awful. And most managers with that win rate, with that points rate, and with where we finished, may well have been sacked. I mean, managers with better records have been sacked in the Championship, let's be honest. So I would take a good look at it at Christmas. And if you're saying, if we are where we are now, what's our position? It's more than what we, 10th, 8th?
Probably 8th. Eight. Eight. Four games to play, right?
We're top 8th. Yeah,
I would say if we're 8th at Christmas, I like the idea of a rolling 1 year contract, as opposed to saying, well, it's 2 years or it's 3 years or anything like that. I like the idea of a rolling 1 year contract. That way, if it goes Pete Tong, he can leave. If Nigel wants to go and do something else, he can go. I don't think he's done a great job here. I think he's done it in different, difficult circumstances. But lots of managers in the Championship inherit difficult circumstances. And a lot of managers have done better with less.
All right.
So, and other clubs, I'm told, well, other clubs get injuries. I mean, I know for a fact Luton had loads of injuries this season, not last season, but the season they got to the playoffs before. They had loads of injuries. So it's not just that. So let's calm down. He doesn't seem exercised about it. I don't think we should be exercised about it. And let's have a look where we are at Christmas. Because let's say we're not 8th. Let's say we're 16th. Then what?
No, that's a good point.
It's possible. It's possible with knowing the injuries we get, and you've got the other problem. You've got players like Cal Naismith and Matt James. As good as they are injury prone. Yeah. Especially Cal Naismith. You know, you worry that they're going to, the next injury they pick up, they'll be out for 10 games. I mean, Cal missed about 25 games last season. Yeah. Matty missed a few as well. You take those players out, and it'll be a calamity. That's the problem you've got with a small squad. One of the things that is forced Pearson to do, and it has all been down to injuries, is he's played a lot of young players, but a lot of times out of necessity. Some of those players have done quite well. Some have disappeared a bit, like Omar Taylor-Clark. I think he's been injured. He's out of the picture now. Idahun came in, I think, for a couple of games a couple of seasons ago. Never really kicked on from there. But some of the players, like, you know, Sam Bell came in, and Tommy Conway has been a revelation. So that's some of the that's the good side of it. But that's really because we've got such a small squad, and with those injuries, it's complete necessity. But that's a good thing. If we want to bring loan players in, other teams will look at Bristol City and say, look, they blood lots of young players and they look after them. That's one of the good things going forward. So
Pearson doesn't.
But because we've got such a small squad and our transfer policy is one with belt tightening, we're reliant on the academy. We are really reliant on the academy for numbers right now.
Yeah.
No choice.
No. Interesting. All right, chaps, everybody who's been listening. I say, I think we had a few sound problems for the first half of this broadcast, which...
Well, if you're on Robin's TV yesterday, David, you wouldn't have had a picture.
Yeah, I know. It's unusual for us to have sound problems. We did used to have, because we were renowned for having sound problems and crap opinions, but now it's just crap opinions, but a few sound problems today. You're not with us next weekend, Mark, but Ian and I will be back with a review of Stoke City at home, which we sincerely hope would be a win. But thanks everybody who's listened to the last two episodes. I think we got a regular hardcore audience of 1,000, because the West Brom game and the Plymouth game sort of bang on 1,000 downloads from each. So that's a small proportion of the total base, but we're grateful.
It's nice to know someone's listening.
It is nice to know someone's listening, indeed. So everybody, for now, I'll say cheerio. The reason why the opening music is Roger Whittaker's The Whistling Song, or The Mexican Whistler, I think, to be precise, is because he passed away this week at the age of 87. I was going to put that as my music for Plymouth game.
Well, let's hope it's not the last farewell for any players then.
Yeah.
Oh, I can remember Roger's musings when my dad used to play. I suppose it was like the same in a lot of households. Sunday mornings, the stereogram. God, I'm losing. I'm just completely lost the audience.
Well, Roger away.
Durham Town.
I can remember once.
Oh my God.
Driving down the A1M, and he'd been in concert up in Newcastle. And I was driving down from Newcastle. And I'm sure it was him driving in a Range Rover on my tail, pretty much.
Was he leaving old Durham Town?
I don't know about that. Ian, any Roger Whittaker memories at all?
Well, my mum and dad went to see him in concert, I think. Born in Zimbabwe, didn't he? But he was a staple of the UK charts in the early 70s. Very, very much of the Saturday night Val Doonican entertainment variety, wasn't he?
You got it. Absolutely.
I've lost the audience again.
When we only had two or three television channels.
Yeah.
I remember when we only had two, that was ITV and BBC. Then BBC Two came along, but he was always, like you say, he was always on the Val Doonican show, wasn't he? Whistling and singing songs and all the rest of it. So, yeah, good. Well, he had a good knot by the sound of it.
Yeah, 87. Easy, one of easy listening's champions, I think, really.
There we go. Our own tribute to Roger Whittaker.
We've lost everybody now. Everybody's gone.
The tail end of this episode.
Yeah. Anyway, they want to talk about Morgan Whittaker, don't they?
Thanks for listening. I'd be interested to know. You see, we don't know these things. Whilst we get 1,000 downloads, I also noticed there's this visual version of it, right? This visual version last week had about 600 views. Now, I don't know whether people take one look at us on vision and then switch, or whether they watch for one
minute. Speak for yourself.
Whether they watch for 1 minute and then think, oh, let's listen to this on my iPlayer or something like that, or whether they sit down and look at us.
That top you've got, is that the old top or the new goalkeeper top, Ian, you've got on? Is that the Hummel one or the O'Neill's one?
It's the leisure wear range, Mark.
Oh, right, because the commentator, I think I had the Leicester commentary on yesterday when I was watching it, and they were musing about Max's his goalkeeper's shirt being like a work of art, you know, paint splashes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Well, there was a comment about a press conference that was written by a third party. It might have been a Leicester fan or something, saying Nigel looked like some... He was sat in front of a display at the back that looked like some kid had had a bad afternoon with his crayon and pencils. We all know who that might be. Let's not say that anymore. Everybody, thanks for listening. And we'll be back with you all next weekend after the Stoke game. Thanks a lot, everybody. Goodbye.
Thanks for listening. Take care.
What if I've been unlucky? Really, I ain't got a thing. There's a time I always feel happy as a king. When the red robin comes bobbing along, along. There'll be no more sobbing when he starts throbbing his old sweet song. Oh, wake up, you sleepyhead. Get up, get out of bed. Cheer up, cheer up. The sun is red. Live, love, laugh and be happy. What if I've been blue? Now I'm walking through fields of flowers. Rain may glisten, but still I listen for hours and hours. I'm just a kid again, doing what I did again, singing a song. When the red robin's out, bobbing along. Red robin comes bobbing along, along. There'll be no more sobbing when he starts robbing his old sweet song. Oh, wake up, you sleepyhead. Get up, get out of bed. Cheer up, the sun is red. Live, love, laugh and be happy. What if I've been blue? Now I'm walking through fields of flowers. Rain may glisten, but still I listen for hours and hours. I'm just a kid again, doing what I did again, singing a song. When the red robin starts bobbing along.